Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey, everybody.
Hello. Hi, Jenny.
Wow. Back
Hi.
Into the swing of things. It has been a mere 14 days since we've last discussed an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We've got a quick and dirty intro for you. Actually, it's not. Well, it does include the sexual attention award.
Dirty enough.
It's pretty dirty. Couple of things. One, this Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern, a reminder for our book club members, we will be discussing Leigh Bardugo's Ninth House. That is for $5 patrons and higher. It also reminded me that I should read the book, so I'll be doing that this week.
Nice.
Also, coming around the bend, April 17th at 5 p.m. Eastern, all of our patrons are invited to a concert of music played by one Jenny Owen Youngs. You're gonna be playing some hot buffering jams, Jenny?
Yes.
Hell yeah. You can learn all about this and all of the events that we have going on at bufferingthevampireslayer.com. Just click on events.
You know what else you can learn about right here and right now without clicking on anything? The winners of last episode's Sexual Attention Awards.
You don't have to click because I have to scroll. Do you know how long I have to scroll every time I have to find the results of these friggin' polls? Forever.
Well, you should bookmark the episodic poll when you post it.
You
just
should bookmark the fucking episodic poll.
Maybe I will. Okay, speaking of me bookmarking things, in fourth place with a mere measly, pathetic 18% of the vote, it's me and a short, thick TV guide.
It's not that bad when you consider the next result.
Yeah, honestly, stiff competition, if you know what I mean, because in third place, practically unheard of with 20% of the vote, it's Buffy and Spike. So I'm almost, me and TV Guide are almost as hot and heavy as Buffy and Spike.
In second place, tabula rasa, it should be noted.
Right. In second place with 26% of the vote, she's a vengeance demon, he's a watcher, and neither one of them knows it. It's Rupi and Anya. Excuse me, Rupi and Anya.
Thank you.
And in first place, what we have all been waiting for, outstiffening all the competition with 36% of the vote, it's Randy and Rupert. Hell yeah.
Yeah, my emoji for that one, in case you're not on Twitter, was a peach emoji followed by a hand emoji. So you're all welcome.
Oh, my word.
Thank you very much. I think when I brought that nomination up into the feed, Jenny, you were like, I don't know. And I was like, you just wait. So thank you for proving me right, the internet. One more thing before we roll into the episode. I haven't been doing emails in a couple of episodes because we've had so much to talk about. I've got an email to share with you today, Jenny, that I'm pretty excited about. This email is from Rosie, and it harkens back to a time in the pod not that long ago when we started talking about clams. There was just a lot of like mollusk-centric conversation. I don't know if you remember
sure.
that time. Okay, so Rosie writes in recently and says, I wanted to share with you a little known tale about 8 heroic clams in Poland.
Wow.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't wait to get into another intro so I could share this email. The water quality in Warsaw is monitored by clams. If the water gets too toxic, they close, and this trigger shuts off the city's water supply.
What?
Automatically. The lives of millions depend on 8 small clams working hard to detect contamination in the city's water supply. I'll say it again
what?
For effect. The lives of millions depend on these 8 small clams. Is it a coincidence that the podcast eventually turned to discussing clams alongside our heroine Buffy? I think not.
Wow.
Polish filmmaker Julia Pelka has directed an incredible documentary called Fat Kathy about this life-saving work of clams. Anyway, I thought it was a nice connection between Buffy, hero of Sunnydale, and the 8 nameless but no less important heroes of Warsaw.
Wow.
Jenny, Rosie sent a picture to us that I'm going to share with you now of one of these
clams. Is it the clams?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is.
Do they have googly eyes glued onto their shells? Oh, my God. What?
Can you describe to the listeners what you're seeing?
Okay, picture a clam. It's just sitting like you would think a clam would be sitting. And then fastened atop its upper shell is a sproingy spring. And at the end of the sproingy spring, there's sort of like a short cylinder with a little dome cap, which I guess is the sensor, which when the clam fully closes, it gets very close to a rod directly under it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sending the message to shut off the water supply.
No big deal. Just a fucking tale of heroic clams to usher
Unbelievable.
You in to this episode.
The chosen clams.
Yeah.
Now that my soul has been nourished by this tale of eight clams who just wanted to do the right thing, I must now transition to straight-facedly, seriously, solemnly inform you that this episode contains conversations on themes of abusive relationship dynamics. So please consider yourself contently warned.
All right, let's get into this.
And welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one by one, spoiler free, in tandem with Angel on top. I am Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo. And hey, this week we are talking about season 6, episode 9, Smashed. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every other week for an original song written by us, recapping the Buffy episode that we are discussing.
Smashed was written by Drew Z. Greenberg, directed by Tori Meyer, and originally aired on November 20th, 2001.
Wow, you're not going to be able to hold that one in.
No, 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 I'm fine.
Oh, yeah, you're okay? You're okay with that proximity to your birthday? It's just so close. Oh, God.
No,
okay.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Also,
it's fine.
Is it your 21st?
I'm very chill.
No, it's your 20th birthday. Okay, so this is the one, according to TV Guide, where Spike gets a headache that renews his primal impulses. I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about that. When Buffy rejects his amorous? Is that how you say that word? Amorous?
Uh-huh.
Amorous. Advances.
Amorous.
Willow reverts a former classmate to her old self. Amy doesn't even get a name in the TV Guide. Rude.
Well, because of spoilers.
I mean, okay, fine. Jonathan, Warren, and Andrew pull a heist with the help of a new weapon. Wow. Wow. Tonight at 8. I don't even know if that's the time that this show aired. I should probably know that, shouldn't I?
This previously on has got to be second for most episodes included after the finale of season 5, which of course had a moment from every episode of the entire series.
I mean, it hits hot with Amy. Just like there's nothing before Amy. Like you're like, wait, what? Where? Who?
Whoomst
among us? Oh, right, that rat that Willow has just gleefully kept in a fucking cage for seasons upon seasons. Also, we get like a clip from Spike and Warren back when the Buffy bot was created, which is like, you know, if you don't know what the episode's gonna be, I think you're also thinking like, is the Buffy bot gonna come back into play? Like,
is
there an Amy bot? A rat bot?
Piloted by a tiny rat who has like a little cockpit inside the skull?
Ooh.
I hope.
And then we get the trio. Remember
episode.
The trio? Like, who are they? We haven't seen
Barely.
Them in what feels Oops. Like years. And then, of course, a reminder that Giles has left. Fuck that. And a reminder that Spike and Buffy kissed again.
Ooh.
Buffy's really into some fucking braids. It's like a marker. Like, if you, like, emotionally track Buffy's hair, I think braids is a very particular point in time. in her journey. Mm. She's got these two very tight braids in this scene and in the few that follow. And she also, and if anyone wants to explain this to me, because like I am a girl with hair that is had been braided, but I have never put a clip in the middle of the part on the back of my head. And there is just a clip in the middle of the back of her head. So please email me specifically at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com and tell me why, if you know why. Why is there a clip on the back of Buffy's head for these braids?
I didn't see it. I don't acknowledge it. Do not email me about it. Here's something we haven't seen ever or in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Some good old-fashioned mugging.
A good old-fashioned mugging. Hey, do you think that, like, the crime... Do you think they count the crime the same? Like, demon crime and human crime in the Sunnydale crime roster? Like, will this go in the same column as, like, a vampire bite for crime? Or is it, like... Or like, do the Sunnydale police write good old-fashioned mugging and put, like, one dash next to that tally column?
Yeah, they put that in a otherwise empty, cavernous filing cabinet for human crime.
So this scene sets us up, just like a reminder that Spike has a chip. You know, like, we can't focus on it all the time. And so these human people are mugging these other human people. Spike doesn't know. He comes flying over whatever fucking pile of bricks is in the alley and punches what he thinks to be demons, screaming out in pain, of course, because the chip is there. Buffy refers to him as Jessica Fletcher, in case you're wondering who that is.
Whomst,
do you not know, Jenny? Did you not look up Jessica Fletcher? Jessica Fletcher is the name of Angela Lansbury's character in Murder, She Wrote, everyone.
Oh, wow.
A delightful love
wow,
to have
calling
Buffy
Spike
refer
like
to Spike.
Angela Lansbury really, really works for me.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Spike, with his beautiful Spike logic, suggests that you know, it's silly that this implanted chip doesn't let him bite criminals. And let me tell you what I would like to never be the case for: a chip implanted in someone's head by the government to determine who counts as a criminal. Let's just avoid that.
Hot, yes.
Entirely.
Great idea.
Entirely.
Great point. Solid point. Yes. And this just in general, I mean, a better point than the one I had to make, but just in general, like, you know, the idea that, like, well, Spike can only bite bad people and not good people. It's very, this whole episode, right, especially, and I know, we're going to try our best to unpack so much in this episode, but the Buffy sort of saying to Spike, like, you are an evil monster, you are this, you are that, it's like, we're kind of, I know that they are working through things personally, but this, like, criminal, not a criminal, vampire, not a vampire. We're in season six, people. This is not, we know that no vampire is but a vampire. No criminal is but a criminal. We have great overall.
All this you're an evil dead thing is just classic repressed romantic vampire slayer shin kicking on the playground. That is what's going on.
Okay, so Spike is like, yo, there's other ways to get your rocks off. a lot of innuendo in this episode. And
he wants to jump right to the kissing, but then takes a quick detour to being a real piece of shitsville.
Yeah, you're a tease, he says. And then the line, like, you know, this whole relationship is, as you may have guessed, really fucking problematic in a million ways. We are going to dig into it in so many ways this season. We're going to have special episodes, whatever. It's a toxic dynamic. And I think, like, it's really important to note the moment because some of these moments are really confusing to navigate because they are a slayer and a vampire. They both have superhuman strength. There's been metaphors in this show already with fighting and fucking. So, like, I just want to, like, at this stage, really try to point out the things that are clearly out of the relationship of vampire and slayer, clearly a signal of bad news. And one of them is in this scene at the end when Spike says to Buffy, you've got no one else. That, that is abuser. That's abuser language. That's abuser language. And that is the moment. It's not the, it's, you know, the tease thing is fucked up. We could play the patriarchy jingle, but I want to save it for later. The you know, all this, there's stuff, but that moment, I think, is the one deserving of the most attention in this scene because it's fucked up. And sometimes I wonder, like, how this episode would have ended if Spike did not show up in that way. Like, what would have happened if Spike did not use this really horrible language toward Buffy? Like, would, because it's, there is no denying that there is some attraction and connection here, right? But the problem right now is that Spike is manipulating Buffy's journey and Buffy's mental state to get her to where he would like her to be. And that's fucked up. And it's not that she wouldn't even necessarily get there anyway. She might. But, like, this is not the fucking way, dude. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Elsewhere in You've Got No One Land, Willow checks in on Rat Amy for the first time in... dot, dot, dot.
Seriously.
Who knows how long?
Like, Willow now? Like, now that Tara has left Willow, she's like, well, maybe I can find a spell. Come on.
The unchecked power of just doing a spell to bring yourself the spell that you need to do.
Yeah.
It's just spells all the way down, Kristen. Also, I think it's worth noting, you know, Willow's doing her little bit and she's all like, we should get you a nice companion rat that you can love and grow attached to. And then one day they can leave you for no good reason. Clearly framing that Willow is still in the mindset that Tara left for no good reason.
Yeah, that's it. That's a great fucking point, actually. I missed that because I was over here busy being like, why didn't you get her a companion rat, you fucking assholes?
Also that, but also then imagine if what's about to happen happened and then we all had to know, Willow especially, that she allowed Amy and another rat to potentially bone.
Okay, yeah, fair.
How you come back from that?
Yeah, you, yeah, it's true. That's true. That's a good point.
She's Amy, already having a hard time.
Amy is in human form, not for the first time. We will note, right? There was that one hilarious moment, hilarious for everyone but Amy, where she was turned back into Amy and then immediately back into a rat again. But this time,
she's very brief moment in Something Blue back in season four. That was when that brief transformation took place.
Ah, lovely, lovely. You pulled that from your little archives over there. Flip, flip,
that's
flip.
Right.
She went through her
flip,
notes.
Flip, 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 flip.
Amy is naked on the bed, and this pre-credit scene ends with her screaming very loudly because she just fucking transformed from a rat to a person. And she's sitting. I mean, she's going to have, listen, sorry to say it, but she's going to have some serious doily prints on her butt because that bedspread, that bedspread, this is where, like, Buffy was borrowing Joyce's pillowcase back in seasons one and two, I think, because this doily bedspread matches those doily pillowcases big time.
Credits! We got some credits. And then we come back in on... unfortunate things to look, but we look back on a lot of problematic things in this show from the late 90s and early 2000s. But you know what really hurts? Not in a, you know, cultural way, but just in a we were all there and we let this happen kind of way. The backwards golf cap. No,
Andrew!
I did it. You did it. We all did it and we're all ashamed. We have to live with this for the rest of our lives. This Jason Gordon Levitt on Third Rock from the Sun shit.
Andrew is like rappelling from the ceiling of the Sunnydale Museum in, as Jenny has so beautifully described, a backwards golf cap. The thing that takes his his backwards golf cap over the top, Jenny, is that he has spent at least 4 hours
pulling
on
each
the whisk spikes on the bang spikes.
Yeah, he spiked his little blonde bangs over the brim of the back of this hat. It is I can't. I love Andrew so much. I love him so much. He has, for absolutely no reason at all, done this. He wants to be. It's very, you know, Mission Impossible. I've never seen Mission Impossible, but that's another story for another day. But I know that this is a play on Mission Impossible. Jonathan and Warren are already in the museum and they are stealing a diamond. Jonathan and Andrew can't be the ones to burn a hole in the glass and take this diamond because Jonathan is allergic to methane and Andrew is afraid of hot things.
Plus, whenever either one of them put the canister backpack on, it made them tip over. How is Warren the butch boy in a trio? You know what I mean? How is he the tough guy?
Well, I don't know that he is the tough guy. He just happens to be the heftiest of the guys. He can support the idea of them tipping over with the methane tank on their backs reminds me of like a baby Dotson, you know, like when like Dotson puppies are really little, their heads, their legs are so short that their heads sort of like will weigh the front of them down and their little back legs will go up. It's great. Anyway.
What?
It's true. It's true.
I have some YouTubing to do, if you'll excuse me.
So Rusty, the trusty guard at the Sunnydale Museum comes out and he's like, boys, what are you doing here? And like, listen, some of the comedy is just, it works for me. It works for old Kristen. Fucking Warren being like, we gotta freeze Ray out of here. We're part of the freeze ray group. It, like, the delivery is good. The joke works for me. I like it.
It is effective. It is appropriate for these goons.
Mm-hmm.
When Jonathan and Andrew finally get the picture, they then freeze the fuck out of Rusty.
They do.
He's a rust-sickle.
Sounds like Rusty's going to make it because of the hair dryers employed by the professionals at the Sunnydale Hospital later. But definitely they're playing with life and death here. You know, they're really, I don't think that anyone was super concerned about what Rusty's fate would be. Jonathan's hand is frozen to the freeze ray gun because this is a prototype. And we cut back to the Summer's bedroom where we get so twitchy. Oh my God. It's truly so great. Fucking Amy is like, so prom. Like, at least I've made it back for prom.
In time for prom.
And we're like, Amy, since prom, there's been a pandemic. We've been through a lot since prom, Amy. Willow says, I have a few things to tell you. She says, because Amy wants to go with Larry. Remember Larry?
Yes.
R.I.P. Larry.
Now, there's a guy that some methane canister backpacks could not tip over.
Yeah, seriously. He could put fucking three of those methane tanks on his back.
He could put the whole trio on his back and not tip over.
With their methane tank. Larry is gay. Larry is dead. And high school is kind of over. So Amy has a lot to adjust to.
Yeah.
And
also worth noting that as she's sitting and twitching and whatnot, she's doing some very like reflex based magic, closing the window when there's a loud noise outside, the curtains with the flick of a wrist, which makes me wonder like, what's been going on for the last couple years while she's been a rat?
Right.
Has she just been powering up in some way, but unable to, you know, like, it's like compound interest. Is there compounding interest on magical ability, especially if it goes unused? Mm-hmm. Or you just, once you open that can of worms, does that can of worms just keep multiplying and getting stronger? Strong worms?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. And like, why couldn't she, like, are there magic rats? Another question. You know what I mean? Can rats do spells? Apparently not Amy, but like, why? Is the size of the cells in your being, do rats have cells that are smaller than human cells? I gotta go.
Well, I'm going to guess that it has more to do with
hand movement.
Oh my God,
if you can see the way that Jenny just moved her hands.
I'm just doing my magic hands. This is yet another variation on a theme. You've got
swivel mittens,
jazz hands. You've got spirit fingers. You've got swivel mittens. And then you've got magic hands. Magic hands kind of move in a very fluid sort of figure eight, horizontal infinity sign kind of deal. Just trust me.
Moving back to the bedroom, Willow's bedroom, I guess, now since Tara is gone. Buffy comes in. Amy is in the bathroom. She doesn't know that, of course. Buffy sits down and is about to tell Willow about what's been going on with Spike. Oh, if it were to have happened. Oh, if communication were to have happened. Where would this show go?
Get these people into therapy and then let them talk to each other and we wouldn't have a show anymore.
Like, if Buffy and Willow could have just had this conversation, you know, just fucking as LaToya would say, write it in your Shanshu prophecies.
Yeah. This is how, for the record, this is how I approach a difficult conversation. From as far away as possible. You know how we all make choices of varying quality? In the beginning, God or whomstever created the earth.
This is Jenny confessing her. This is literally how you approach talking about your feelings. It truly is.
Yeah, it is. And so I respect Buffy's approach here. It's hard. You gotta just work up your momentum, you know? You gotta get there in your own time. And it's tough. But there's no time for that right now because in sweeps Amy.
In sweeps Amy. And let's bring in our first sound clip here because this might be one of the best exchanges of the series, in my opinion.
Amy? The whole school? By a giant snake thing. You still adjusting? Hey, Buffy. Hi. How have you been? Rat. You? Dead. Oh.
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's a good it's a good summary. You know, they both are succinct, clearly explaining what they have been up to. And Amy wants some cookies.
Yes, she does. She's got her priorities straight. She's got to sleep on the couch. Willow, after Amy leaves the room, Willow tells Buffy it's nice having another magically inclined friend around.
Can you explain your scream?
Just like everyone's, Buffy in particular, like Buffy's deep unawareness of what is going on, you know, because she is understandably consumed with, you know, having recently been ripped out of heaven and returned to the mortal plane and also feeling a hot, sweaty attraction to an evil dead thing. I get it. But this is kind of Buffy's thing. She is pretty consistently consumed with her own shit and missing other people's stuff. And I think what we see through this episode is her making excuses in her mind for Willow because of her own experience, because she wants to make those excuses for herself.
1,000%.
So when Willow says it's nice having another magically inclined friend around and that doesn't set off one single alarm for Buffy, it's like,
Buffy. Totally. I also, to the point of like her being, you know, ripped out of heaven and what have you, I thought it was really interesting that Buffy was like, is she going to be okay about Amy? And like Willow was like, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I'm like, perhaps. Okay. We don't want to talk about this. Okay. So down to the living room, Buffy goes. Amy is eating what really do look to be incredible cookies. They look delicious.
They look incredible. There's so many.
I mean, she has so many on that plate. Cheese, it sounds like, in a long time.
Buffy and Amy are running down some things that are different since she was a rat. And Buffy mentions that there is a new Gatorade flavor, which she identifies as blue. I did a little.
Oh my God, I did research.
Gatorade
too.
Research.
God damn it, I was gonna quiz you.
Okay, I would actually love, because I didn't get definitive answers that lined up with this timeline. I would love to take your quiz. right now.
Okay. So first of all, before we get to Jenny and I are going to do Gatorade deep dive. Looks like we both knew what in this episode required research, and it was fucking Gatorade. But I do want to point out that the first thing that Amy says to Buffy is, "I'm sorry about your mom," which I think is just really, they don't go right into this like jokes about, you know, Tom and Nicole and Gatorade and stuff, you know, like there is this moment of like there was a loss here, like a very serious loss, which I really love. Okay, so first of all, my first question about Gatorade, Jenny, is do you know when Gatorade hit the scene, like when it was invented? You may have found this out in your research, which is bumming me out, but I skipped ahead
on the Wikipedia article past like all the origin story stuff, but I think I remember Floridian college team,
correct,
the Gators,
correct,
of somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Their team mixologist came up with something, a combination of water, sugar, and salt to replace the electrolytes that are being sweated out.
And
how did I do?
No, you did pretty good. I didn't even know all the chemical details there that you just listed. But I wonder, like, in the timeline, in history, where you think this was.
Okay, I'm picturing men wearing pants that go, like, all the way up to the bottom of their rib cage. So I'm going to say 50s.
Okay, well,
how did I do?
I'm curious of how you did on pants going up to the rib cage in the 50s, because I thought that would be the 70s, but it was this.
No, not bell bottoms going all the way up, just like, you know, men wearing like high-waisted pants and short top. Okay,
Jenny and I are gonna a special bonus podcast where we talk about men's pants and Gatorade. 1966 is when Gatorade hit the scene.
All right.
Now,
all right.
You are correct about conflicting information. I found a minimum of three blue Gatorade flavors.
Okay.
And the first thing that I read said that 2001 was when Frost High Tide hit the scene. It was blue. But then, no.
1997,
correct,
Arctic Frost. Yes.
Glacier Freeze, I believe, is what I saw.
Mm.
This is what I'm saying.
Wait, am I thinking of Alpine Frost?
You are. I think it's Glacier Freeze 97 is the first blue Gatorade, which still kind of works on that. Well, no, because, yeah, it still works on the timeline.
No, because she was
gone.
She, Gingerbread is 99. So she was turned into a rat in 1999.
Okay, so there was already blue Gatorade as of 97, but this 2001 thing is weird, and then Cool Blue, which is the blue Gatorade that I think a lot of people know about, that didn't come out until, according to this one article, 2003. It wasn't even, Cool Blue isn't even in the Wikipedia. It's not even in the Wikipedia. So right now, you can get Cool Blue and Glacier Freeze. Those flavors are available for purchase. Frost High Tide is this 2001 thing that I saw in an article. It's not in the wiki. Listen, just somebody go to your local library, get out the microfiche. You know what I mean? This is going to require some detective work. I would like a full report on my desk by morning. History of Blue Gatorade, go. All right, well, at least we know, Jenny, that, you know, like as two hosts of a podcast, we hold respect for
great power and great responsibility.
Yeah, we know what requires our skills. So anyway,
you know what's really been grinding my gears lately?
What?
People on television getting a call to turn on the news, alerting them that something pertinent to their interests is about to be on. You know what I mean? I realize that's not exactly what's going on here. Amy is saying, yeah, someone got frozen. It's one of the many things I've taken in while I've been sitting here watching TV. And as it so happens, they're about to repeat what I've already taken in right now, just as this happens to come up in conversation. It's more egregious when someone calls Coach Taylor and is like, Coach Taylor, you got to turn on fucking Dylan 7.
Coach Taylor? You rewatching Friday Night
and
Lights?
Then Coach Taylor turns on the TV and it's like, whoa, we hear, get these reports that Coach Taylor is considering an offer from Southern California State. And Coach Taylor's like, how did you know that was about to happen? So what, they're just every news story is like, I'm going to say this now and then I'm going to say it again in 45 seconds. Well, so call whoever you need to let know about it.
I mean, to be fair, having watched the news occasionally, they do repeat things, you know, like it's not like, okay. Well, needless to say, they're very interested in the frozen man at the museum because not only does Buffy see that frozen man on the news, but she has time enough to get to the museum with the news crew still there reporting. He hasn't even been wheeled out of the, hasn't even been removed yet.
How are you gonna wheel out this man, this frozen man, on a dolly in front of everyone?
Also, like, does anyone know about what happens to a frozen man if he falls off that dolly? That's it for him.
Also, are you gonna tell me that this museum doesn't have a loading dock in the back with a ramp?
Agree.
Come on now.
Agree.
Come on.
He should be strapped to that fucking dolly at the very least, and he should be going out the back door. We need to go to Sunnydale and advise the media and the paramedics on how
help.
To handle things. So Spike's on the scene.
Detective Spike. He's there with his magnifying glass and his little notepad. His trench coat.
Like we are to believe that he is there just because he thinks Buffy is going to be there. It is weird that he's there, because why?
Classic Spike.
A little compassion.
You have a crush on somebody and you're a creep, you go to where you think they're going to be.
True.
Just hang about.
So Buffy takes what is probably a healthy step in communication. Because up till now, she's just been like, I'm not talking about it, right? Which, like, technically is also not, like, a healthy response. Like, this thing happened, and the adult, mature, grown-up thing to do is to have a conversation about, like, why it happened, what you want, etc. So she does that, right? I'm sorry if you thought that the kiss meant more. She unfortunately phrases it that when she kissed Spike, she was thinking of Giles, giving us all a moment of, huh? But she goes on to explain, you know, Giles left. I was depressed. I was vulnerable. And in that spot, you make bad kissing decisions. And I made a bad decision. And, like, that's what it was. Now, we all know perhaps there's more going on here. We'll talk about it. But I just want to give Buffy some credit for, like, maturely discussing. And Spike gets another demerit because he says, did you convince yourself that that's what this is? And, like, here's the thing. Even if Spike believes there to be something else going on, that is not what you say to the girl who just explained to you what she needs, what she wants, and why she did what she did. No, thank you, sir.
Clearly, the only path open to them is to exchange punches.
Yeah. Well, and Buffy goes for the jugular, so to speak. You're not a man. You're a thing. She knows what is going to, you know, hurt Spike, and that does. And he grabs her. Not cool. She hits him. He hits her, realizing, holy fuck, that didn't hurt me.
Dun, dun, dun. So, what can Spike do but, of course, immediately locate a human woman to terrorize and monologue at?
Well, but it should be noted that Spike fakes a scream. Like, Buffy does not realize in this moment that it hasn't hurt him. He has the wherewithal to be like, let me just see what's going on here before I give up the goods. Yes, then, as he says, he's looking at the goodies.
So he's just, like, twirling his mustache, and he's all like, I'm going to eat you, and it'll show her, and now things are different, here we go!
I smell fear.
It smells good. Oh, yeah, just some A-plus writing. So he goes in for the slurp,
but the chomp.
Yeah, a little chomp and slurp. But alas, here comes some shrieking, and it's not this mortal woman's. It is the neurological pain-induced shrieking of one William the Bloody, quote, Spike, end quote. We don't know his last name.
Yeah. Yeah, and before he attempts this chomp, he has this like classic villain moment where he's like working through his psychological stuff with his potential victim, you know, just because she's confused doesn't mean I'm confused. I know what I am. I'm dangerous. I'm evil. And I point that out because I do think it's interesting that one of the things they're setting us up with and they have set us up with is that Buffy and Spike really occupy similar spaces in some ways. And this is it. This is like the biggest way, right? Spike is a vampire. He feels his nature is supposed to be evil. He's supposed to be killing people. He's whatever. He has a chip in his head. He can't do that. And he's fallen in love with the Slayer. And he has feelings for her. And as we see in this episode, even if he could kill her, he sure the fuck isn't going to kill her. So he's like, I don't understand. Like, I'm supposed to be evil, but I don't feel evil. And it's not, it seems like it's past just the chip, right? And on the flip side, Buffy is like, I'm the Slayer. I'm supposed to be good. I'm supposed to be this. I'm supposed to be whatever. But she's not feeling those things. She's feeling attracted to Spike. And she's feeling unmotivated, and she's feeling like she doesn't want to fucking do this shit, and what is the point of life? And so they're both in this place where like their image of who they thought they were isn't reconciling with who they are right now, and they're both confused, and Spike is trying to pretend like he's not in this moment, but I just think that it illustrates that really nicely. You want to have a milkshake?
No, I want to fast forward through this scene.
Oh, I know. This is important, though, Tara and Dawn. I mean, well, why do you want to fast forward through the scene, Jenny? Just because you don't like milkshakes?
I don't know if it's the performances or the writing. It just feels like a swing and a miss to me. Like, I understand why it's there, and I think there's just something lost in the execution where this scene just like really lands with a clank.
Yeah,
to me.
It's almost like the writers have an easier time writing unhealthy dialogue than they do writing healthy.
Hell yeah. Oh, this is the equivalent of trying to write a happy song. I see what's going on here.
I mean, because that's what this is. It's like Tara is the only character that we see who is making an effort to be present in ways that are healthy. She's taken Dawn out. She's saying that she loves her. She didn't leave because of anything having to do with Dawn. These are the things that people should be saying to Dawn and each other, and no one is. And I agree with you. It like almost feels like this weird off scene. And I think it's because I think it's because of what we were just saying, that like it's easier to write conflict for many people than it is to write the opposite of that. And I think that that's less and less the case. But I think that where we were in this time period and in a show like this that was hinging, especially at this point, on like Spike and Buffy fucking a house down, they wanted to get through this scene and move along is what it feels like. So let's.
Yeah. Just want to point out really quickly that Dawn tells Tara that Willow has been really good about being careful about stuff.
Yeah.
Which feels like a very long way of not saying anything at all.
Yeah. 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 Well, right. I mean, I think it's just really indicating that Dawn knows what the issue is, but Dawn doesn't know that the solution lies outside of just bringing Tara back. You know, she just wants to put that Band-Aid over it. And I mean, that's what Willow wants, too. So you can't really fault Dawn for it. All right. First of all, why the fuck is Giles taking a goddamn text that they need overseas because he owns it? What's this man doing? What's he fucking doing? You know what I mean? He didn't need to leave in the first place. Now he's taking books with him.
Well, just to be fair, it was his book.
What does he need the book for? They're on the Hellmouth.
Whoa. What's he doing over there?
Great. What is
An
he
independent
doing?
Study?
Independent Maybe. Study. Maybe Olivia really wanted to like read the book aloud to him. Maybe it was their special book together.
Boing. Speaking of landing with a thud.
Yeah.
Here comes the world's history's thickest laptop. Ka-chunk.
I had this laptop and it is that heavy. It's just fucking like a white brick. They think that she's going to use the computer. She does, but she uses it by channeling magic through it to absorb information about what's going on. Anya has a great quip. When they find out that there's a diamond that's been stolen, Anya says, "Diamonds are excellent at cursing," which I thought special.
Hell yeah.
Given her history.
File that away for future use.
Yeah. And given her history as a vengeance demon, then, you know, it's good. Okay, so they're all like walking on eggshells around Willow's use of magic, except for Anya, who says,
"Oh, for crying out loud, this is bizarre. You're all la 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 with the magic and the not talking like everything's normal when we all know that Tara up and left you and now everyone's scared to say anything to you. Except me. Is this that thing I do that you were commenting?"
I screamed. "Is this that thing I do that you were commenting on?" That delivery. So sick.
Oh, it makes me
standing
wish.
Ovation.
It makes me wish and want for a scene between Anya and Cordelia now. Like right now. Like in the timeline now. Can they hang out and have like a glass of rosé together? Like give it to me.
Oh my God. Please.
Please. You know, I think that Anya just earned herself her fucking jingle. I'll tell you what.
She spent one millennium demonically vengeancing, speaks her mind and then some. You know she's partial to the finer things and down with double boyfriends, oh yeah. Exchanging cash for goods and also services. She'd love to hold the money for ya.
She'll hold that cash.
Just keep the bunnies far from Anya.
Well, great. Good job, Anya. Willow makes a really unfortunate comment about Amy always thinking about Amy doing rat things while she's alone, perhaps leaving, she says, little pellets in the corner. Guys, let's go to the lair. Let's
See?
Go to the trios.
Now that,
speaking of pellets
wait,
in the corner.
Wait, okay. Before we go, gross. Before we do that, it's important, I think, to point out one more time that Willow's response to what Anya says... just a little bit from the Willow Rosenberg spin room. You know, there were just like little things that we saw differently that got blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Willow. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. All right. So to the lair we go. I've decided to call their lair a lair. They call it a lair, so fine. It's a basement, but we'll call it a lair. "Size is everything," says Warren, looking adoringly at this diamond. And before they can get too wrapped up in the beauty that is this diamond that they've stolen, Spike busts the fuck on in.
Ding dong! It's Spike.
How can he get in here? Has he been in here before?
He's been here before. Warren's mom let him in previously when he brought his little Buffy bot order.
Right. I forgot it was the basement of that house. Correct. Okay. So Spike is like, "Warren, look at my fucking chip." And they're like, "No." And then he picks up Boba Fett of the figurine. I mean, you gotta hand it. Well, like, Spike deserves credit here. Like, he's very adaptable, you know? He knows that certain threats are better on certain people.
Listen, the way that he backs Warren up and, like, leans over him with his, like, arm up.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying, I think it speaks for itself.
I think it speaks for itself, too. And I think it further to it, the scene that happens when Warren is examining Spike's head. You know what I mean? There's just these two guys, you know.
An intimacy.
They could get up to some stuff is all I am saying. And I think you're saying it as well. I think, you know, I think.
Yeah.
Andrew's like, "I think that's Spike," which just killed me. I'm like, is there like a root? Was there a rumor around Sunnydale High about Spike? Like, what? Where did he get his knowledge of Spike from?
Well, he did come to like parent teacher night that one time.
It's true. Oh, when Joyce had the axe. Okay. Yes. Warren, poor logic here, thinking, well, Spike will owe us one if I help him with the chip, dude. And Spike says it himself.
Oh, Warren, you sweet summer child.
Yeah, like, no, dude. That's...
Spike has never considered himself to owe anyone anything.
Except the loan shark. He will pay back the loan shark, the 40 Siamese
kittens. Well, kittens are different. Yeah. Kittens are their own story.
Yes. Andrew gets Boba Fett back and is like, "It's okay. It's okay. You're going to be okay."
Good Lord. Help.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Amy wants to go out. Using shitty tactics right from the jump, to be honest. Like, what, do you want to stay at home like you did when you were in high school? With Amy, Jesus.
Rude.
Why are you being mean to Willow right now? Why, like, but just ask her if she wants to go out. She didn't even say no. Anyway, but I think it's important. Like, I think it's there to illustrate, right, that Willow does not want to be that girl. She wants to be a new version of herself. And she's sort of realizing in this moment, I have no one to answer to now, you know, that which is, you know, dangerous in many ways.
Cut to Andrew telling Spike that he's seen every episode of Doctor Who. And Spike is like, Warren!
You're English, right? I just want you to know, since you're English, I should tell you that,
Now, who knows, who the fuck knows why or how Warren should have any conception of, like, how this chip is designed to work? Also, I can't imagine Spike wanting to be like, hey, so this chip in my head prevents me from hurting humans, and now you know that I can't hurt you, and now you'll be less inclined to do whatever I say in the future.
Yeah, and this is where we get the sexy scan. Warren says to Spike, it's pulsing. Wow, I didn't even mean to get extra sexy, but he does say to Spike, it's pulsing at a regular interval, which it's supposed to do. Warren, I guess his robotics instruction has also taught him a bit about governmental devices and how they work. But I guess, you know,
I guess. So, yeah, we'll just buy this. It's fine. The point is, Spike has enough to sweep out of the basement and say, nothing wrong with me. Something wrong with her.
I did write that down in my notes, so I'm glad that we got a dramatic rendition of it from you.
Well,
Tara decides to stay with Dawn because no one is home.
The 16-year-old can't be home alone.
I mean, Dawn lays it on thick. Boy, it sure is getting darker.
Oh, it sure is getting dark early these days.
Yeah. So Tara stays with her. I would have stayed with her too. Let's be real. Hey, just a fucking queer lady playing magic pool at the Bronze. I will say that I love, as you know what, call it a stereotype, call it the truth. Queer women play a lot of fucking pool, and I'm horrible at it, just FYI. I wish I had that magic skill ability. But I love that Willow and Amy are playing pool together and not just like sitting and having a drink and talking. I like that they've been given an activity.
Does billiards, since it has two L's in the middle,
count as
does that count
L
as
word?
Having one L at the beginning, which would then make it an L word?
Is billiards an L word? Yes. Yes. Official ruling. Okay. Yes. Billiards is an
cool,
L word.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Living, laughing, billiards, loving.
Okay. So some dudes roll up and they're like, you want to dance? And Amy does, because she's been a rat for a few years. So
yeah, she's psyched to not have to
this
gnaw
seems good.
Shit. You know, she's, I mean, maybe she does want to gnaw on these boys, but it would probably look a little bit different.
And Will is like, no, thanks. And then Amy's like, oh, want something a little more your style? And she beckons magically. Oof. And the Marina from the L Words stunt double sweeps this on over.
Disagree,
you know, when television is like, if we put two incredibly straight looking femme presenting women who clearly look like they have never looked in a desirous fashion at another woman or wondered what it might be like to kiss those soft, soft lips ever, but if we just point them at each other, that looks pretty gay, right?
Okay.
So that's what's going on here. And then one of them.
I have a lot of feedback here. First of all, I don't think this girl looks anything like Marina. Though, I do think if she left a voice message on a voicemail box, she would say, hello, Willow. It's me, Brie. Oh, anyway, so that's actually further to my second point, which is that this girl's name is Brie. And I just, it reminded me that one of the things on Cordelia's list back in the library that she hated was Brie. And we thought it was cheese. It's probably this girl. She probably hated this girl.
Oh, yeah.
This is the girl.
Yeah. Cordelia hates this bitch.
Right? This is like totally a girl that Cordelia would hate. So, and then my third point.
Not because she's in quotes gay.
Well, she's not.
But rather.
Gay. She's been made magically gay.
Well, no, but she's clearly there with that other girl.
Oh, is
because they are.
Oh,
they're
my
staring
God.
Into yeah. each other's eyes. I know you couldn't even tell because it was so not right.
That's what you were saying that whole time. I had no idea that that was done so poorly that I just thought they were two literal gal pals. And
it's like, look, I hate to bring porn into it, but have you ever seen porn where there are two ladies engaging in some long-taloned, devoid of passion, sort of like long sexual interaction.
Long talent.
I just...
I see. Well, you know, I did make a note.
There's a very specific look.
Yes, okay.
When straight women are doing gay stuff together financial or directorial reasons.
I now understand. I'm so glad that we've journeyed through this all together because I wasn't even following and now I am fully following. And I even made a note that because I laughed at the end of the scene when she goes back to the girl and the girl was like, what was that all about?
She's like, what was that all about? My lesbian date or possibly bisexual.
Do you think
or possibly
that's her lover, Cindy? Is this a podcast about the L word now? Okay, so the serious thing about this scene that deserves pointing out is this is fucked up. I mean, it winds up being cut off at the pass because Willow's like, this is not what I want. But Amy has very non-consensually activated this woman to go over and
activated is a great word,
right?
Her eyes glow momentarily.
So it's fucked up. It goes into the bin with many of the fucked up boundary crossing, consent breaking things that have happened via magic that we talked about a little bit 2 weeks ago with Natalie, and that we're going to get into in much more detail in a couple of weeks. Anyway, my God.
Great news. Great news for Kristen. Willow's drinking a martini with a pimento stuffed olive, meaning somebody's tapery fingers got in there to fucking jam it in.
Oh, my God.
Instantly negating the fake gay stuff from the previous moment and making me feel very gay.
Long talons need not apply to remove this pimento from an olive.
Correct.
So yeah, Willow is drinking a martini, which I'm into. I do like that she's drinking a martini. And I this episode, I have a lot to say, so I'm not concerned about you. If this is too long for you, you just go ahead, go find somebody else who can do this many L-word references in a short span of time, because you won't find
that God,
person.
Help.
This is not an L-word reference. This is just a conversation on the music that's playing. This is a band called Virgil. They will be later morphed into a band called Halo Friendlies, but that's another story for later. But this band, Virgil, they're singing, I'm getting caught in the corners of her vermilion borders. Do you know what the word vermilion means? You're smart. I have to look it up.
It's a deep red, I believe.
Who knew? But I just want to say that the lyric cuts off because they go on to say, she's ugly when she's insecure. That's where it cuts off in the show. The next lyric of the song is, that's what makes her beautiful.
Beautiful.
Just so you know, that sentiment, being insecure as a woman makes you beautiful. Makes you beautiful.
Yes.
So actually here, let's play the fucking patriarchy jingle there.
The patriarchy.
Oh, we played that in a perfect place because we come right out of that into a big heaping scoop of the fucking patriarchy, don't we?
What happens? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Amy comes off the dance floor and the boys trail her and they're like, oh, you got to keep dancing. And she's like, I'm good. And they're like, you can't just get us all worked up like that. Running theme in this episode. Yeah. Women aren't allowed to, in quotes, get men all worked up.
Yeah.
And then not dot, dot, dot. And Willow's like, hey, man, she said she's chilling for now. And Blonde Douche says, are you ready? It's 2001. Buckle up. Blonde Douche says, nobody asked you, Ellen. The only lesbian anyone had ever heard of in 2001.
Oh, God. So
obviously this guy sucks.
Yeah, these
but
guys.
It is what a position to be in, to be able to look back on severely dated.
Yeah.
This whatever this is and laugh.
Yeah, so they take a little, they get a little revenge fantasy situation in here, which has its own issues. The men are sent to cages where they dance, very scantily clad after their sins.
They're wearing like panties with streamers on them or something.
This is sort of like Hocus Pocus gone sexy. It's like when they put those two shitty boy, like when the witches put the two
sexy.
Sexy in hard quotes. But like,
oh yeah, one of whom is Larry. One of the two boys that goes into those cages is Larry from Buffy.
Wow, I don't know what circle we just closed. You're all welcome. So anyway, these dudes are dancing in cages. Again, the magic is going to go just off the fucking rails at this point. This is not the way to do it, everyone. But let's go to the magic box while Amy and Willow continue their little rampage at the bronze. Xander's looking at a D&D manual. See if he can find this frost
monster.
Okay,
let me just tell you. Let me tell you, I'm sure there's copyright issues or whatever, but that is not a D&D manual.
Oh, wow. Well, you heard it here, folks, from D&D expert Jenny O'Youngs. I'm going to take your word on it because no one has ever decided to teach me how to play Dungeons and Dragons.
So
I never got to learn that game, and I don't know what a manual looks like because no one taught me.
Okay, so Buffy... Buffy is, as we have mentioned before, not concerned about Willow until Anya says, responsible people are so concerned with being good that when they finally get a taste of being bad, they can't get enough. Buffy flashes back to the middle of season three, thinking to herself, I once got a taste of being bad, and then some.
I was once handcuffed to someone who was bad.
Yeah.
So this is like a messy, this comparison between Buffy's choices and Willow's choices is muddy at this point. And I just want to call that out. I think that what Anya is saying here is not accurate. Like, Anya has basically said, when good people get a taste of being bad, they go all kablooey. Which, like, harkens to mind, like, you know, the kids who came to college and they had never had a sip of alcohol would often, like, definitely black out a lot quicker than those of us who had been steadily drinking since before we got to college. Mm-hmm. But that is not what's happening to Willow. That's not, I don't think that that really underlines what's happening to Willow. What's happened to Willow is that Willow has suffered massive trauma and doesn't have the tools to manage that. So I just want to say that. And I also think that that's what's happening with Buffy, but I think it's messy to compare apples to apples, but what Buffy is doing to what Willow is doing, because it's not there. These are not two apples. They have,
hey, we're not comparing. Buffy's comparing.
Right. Buffy. Well, and yeah, Buffy is right. And I think it's right.
Buffy's all show. Well, we can't assume everybody's getting all seduced all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure people are just minding their own business being chill.
Yeah. And Xander, you know, credit to Xander in this scene as well. Like, Tara thinks Willow's doing too much magic and she's not the only one. Xander, who has really experienced firsthand addiction and substance abuse in his own household, and like Buffy's just too wrapped up in the spike of it all to see this.
Speaking of the spike of it all,
bring,
ring ring
bring, bring.
Slayer.
Do you think that Spike has like a pile of quarters at home that he uses to call people from the payphone with? Like, what?
No, I think he has a slug that he like slides in.
Oh, nice.
Makes his call and then pulls it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meet me at the cemetery. Like, meet me behind the school at 2 p.m.
Good Lord.
He's really putting on the villain face a little too hard because he doesn't know what the fuck to do with this thing. And he knows he wants to pretend like he's Spike of yesteryear, who's just going to like trick the Slayer and kill her. But he fucking knows he's not going to do that. Buffy's like, Spike, you're calling me on the phone?
Honestly, how did you get this number?
Well, we know that the Magic Box placed a giant ad in the Yellow Pages.
Oh, that's true.
So, okay, so they leave the Magic Box. Buffy's done a poor job of lying, but nobody's really paying attention. And they sort of have this, like, moment of reflection on, this doesn't seem like monster work that's been happening lately in Sunnydale. And they say their goodbyes, and Spike is... boom, right behind Buffy. What are you going to do? Walk behind me to death, she says.
Very interesting that Spike has changed since earlier in the episode.
Oh,
he is now wearing
duster.
His confront your nemesis / love interest and inform her that she came back from heaven incorrectly / less human, which always calls for a blue button up, as we all know, or
purplish
sort of
blue, yeah,
light.
It's a bright color, a very, very bright color. You came back wrong, he says. He's revealing to her what we found out earlier, which is that he can not hurt anyone. He can only hurt Buffy. And he has a nice, I will give him a little bit of melodrama credit when he says, oh, the pain is gone. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my God.
Smells like fear.
But the
it smells good.
The seriousness of this scene, though, is that he is telling Buffy that she came back a little less human than she once was. And so the chip doesn't register her on its grid.
Dude.
As human, which
it's pretty
is
weird. Pretty weird.
Pretty weird, pretty complicated, and definitely like not a thing to add to Buffy's roster of trauma, right? She's already not feeling like herself. So to be told that a like machine chip thing recognizes that she is in fact not herself is pretty fucked up. And she's upset about it. And she says, you're wrong. Quick cut back to the Bronze, where Willow's like, I would prefer to watch Josie and the Pussycats. Thank you.
There we go. Right? Don't worry. The singer is in the rock squad. It sure was a different time.
Yeah. It was. They're doing all these like things with magic, like making one man tall and one man short and making one man fly in an angel costume, and then sheep come to the bra. Like, it just seems like
this is just not
choice.
Can you imagine being like, you know what would be cool if we did all this stuff with our unlimited power?
You know what we need? Some fucking sheep in this place. Like, what? Okay. Anyway, Buffy and Spike are fighting, both using their fists and using their words. She's telling him, you can't be a vampire. You can't be a man. You can just make moon eyes at me. I'm the fucking slayer. Like, what is your deal, man? He comes back with the cutting jab of, I'm in love with you.
Yikes.
She's like, you enjoy the pain of it all. And he really kind of takes that blow and is like, yeah, well, you know what? I'm a fucking vampire. What's your excuse? Like, yeah, you're right. Everything you're saying is right. And I am an actual vampire. So, like, what's the deal with you? And they fight. And they fight. And they fight. And now I think it's important at this point in the conversation, Jenny, to point out that Buffy is wearing a, we'll call it pleather. Maybe she splurged and it's leather. It is either pleather or leather. And it goes from her waist to the floor or pretty close to it, this skirt. You know, no reason that I want to mention that. I just, you know, I just thought, like, we haven't talked about what she's wearing, so. And they've fought their way into a rickety house. We'll give it that. It did start rickety.
Yeah.
It started shaky.
And
they're fighting. And Buffy is throwing Spike up against a fireplace, or what used to be a fireplace. She's knocking pieces of drywall off of this house with Spike's body. And then what happens?
What happens, Kristen? I'm so glad you asked. In a little segment I like to call 1080p HGTV, they fuck this house right down. Goodbye, crown molding.
Wow.
Goodbye, hardwood floors. Goodbye, hand-bricked fireplace. It's all going down. No inch of this house can withstand the power of their fucktitude. Here they go. Nothing can stop them. What is this Enya-ass music cue?
I'm sorry.
For the moment we've all been waiting for.
I know you have more to say, but I'm going to take me and the listeners back to when you said 1080p HGTV, because I had not been given advance notice of the segment.
Listen, they're assessing this house has great bones, but let's just fuck through this wall between the dining room and the living room and do something that's more of an open concept.
Okay, great. So the philosophy, the sort of cornerstone of this show is we find a house that we'd like to renovate. And we fuck down the walls we don't want.
Which is most of them, because HGTV only cares about open concept.
Okay. Is it always Spike and Buffy fucking the walls down in this 1080p HGTV show?
Well, what I've noticed about HGTV shows is that, you know, whomst ever is overseeing, or, you know, whoever is the director of this episode of HGTV in 1080p, is they generally have like their drywall guy and their like woodwork guy and their mason. They have their regulars that they go to. Right. So I'm going to say that they'll probably go to Buffy and Spike demolition crew regularly. Mm-hmm. Of course, sometimes a contractor is booked solid. Right. Sometimes a contractor is out of town or on vacation.
Right.
I'm sure they'll have to contract other people to fuck the walls down on occasion. But I think mostly it'll be Buffy and Spike. And then, of course, these demolitions are going to have to take place at night.
Do you think that that they would have fucked this house down if Buffy had not been wearing a ankle length plaid? Like, do you think it was just passion, or do you think it was like passion plus trying to have sex through a pleather skirt? Like what was that a part of things?
Define through, because I understand it, skirts just go right up.
Has Spike or Buffy pulled the whole skirt up? I mean, it's similar questions that I had, honestly, in the Ren Faire dress. It's a lot of skirt.
I think that in television, wardrobe comes first. Uh-huh. And any and all sex-related maneuvering or physics comes second.
Okay, yes. You're right. You know, before, okay, I have a lot to say. Well, I have a medium amount to say. But since we're just unveiled our new 1080p HGTV segment, it does seem like a great time to roll on over to the sexual tension. It's possible that the sexual tension will knock down a house in this episode.
That's right. Here we are once again. It always comes back.
There's so much rubble all around. So many piles of drywall.
Claw your way through the stray bricks. Let the mortar dust settle. And gather round, children, as I reveal unto thee some slots and some noms therein. Mm-hmm. Here we go. In your first slot, you've got fan faves. Everybody loves them. Buffy and Spike.
Oh, hey. Didn't expect to see them here.
Haven't seen that. Wow, yeah. Hmm. In slot two, look at that lean. Look at that intimate scan reading. If you know what I mean, it's Spike and Warren.
Oh, a steady pulse, you might say.
In slot three, are you ready? Some passion burns even brighter than the passion between two or more humans. Some passion is... you know, on a deep cellular level, it's about like sustenance and you just like really need someone. And that's what I'm thinking about when I tell you that our slot three features Spike and his deep, passionate need for human blood when he thinks he can freely slurp it from the vein once more. And in the fourth slot, I hope you didn't already vote, people who jammed, fucking smashed that... poll button for slot number one, because we have a wild card for you.
Ooh.
A thruple of sorts.
Mm.
They do it the way only they can do it.
Mm.
This potential thruple, it's Spike, it's Buffy, and it's these rickety, rickety walls just asking to be busted down.
Oh no, I'm a wall and I might just fall down. Oops.
Oh no, I'm condemned. Oh no, time for a full gut remodel.
I've been a naughty, naughty wall. Oh boy. Yeah. So
hell yeah.
Just go on over. Follow us on Twitter at BufferingCast. You can cast your vote for whatever slot and nom combination. I say that now. I own it. I've given up fighting. Love a slot. I love a nom.
Woo! Welcome to the dark side.
The poll will be up for a week, and you can cast your vote for whoever you think deserves the award. Wonderful job. That has been your Sexual Attention Awards.
Sexual Attention Award.
Now, Kristen.
Yes, Jenny.
I would be remiss if I did not highlight for you, in the wake of this fuck the house down scene,
mm-hmm.
The auspicious season and episode number combination of this episode, which is season 6.
Oh my God.
Episode 9.
Oh my God.
You're welcome.
Or as the internet would say, nice.
Nice.
Okay, so season 6, episode 9, the house has been fucked near to down or down completely. And there's one last scene in the Bronze that, Amy and Willow decide that they're bored. I would be bored, too. These are the most boring magic tricks you've ever done, ladies.
Oh, my God.
I'm bored.
So many sheep.
So they undo the magic they've done. Josie and her pussycats disappear. This is the band that is a real. These are both real bands. Halo Friendlies is the name of the lady band. And the sheep disappear. The dudes come out of their. The dudes notably come out of their cages and immediately start being assholes to Bree and Bree's alleged girlfriend. And they are ruminating on what they can do that's bigger and better than the Bronze. So we leave them there. And I just think that it's important. This scene, like, I remember when we had Alana on, Alana Bennett, and she was there were certain things that we couldn't talk about because of spoilers. But, like, I remember her specifically being like, this scene really made me confused about what it was to have sex. Just like, this was my initial sex education and it fucked me up. I think that this is a scene that exists in many people's brains as like, I was watching Buffy with my parents and then I got to this episode and I have never recovered. I think that apart from Riley taking the boot off of Buffy,
Ooh,
which was incredibly
confounding sexual moment.
Yeah. I mean, there was the orgasm wall, you know, there's that. But
oh, yeah.
But this is like a dark sexiness that the show has not yet explored. And there, as you know from listening to this episode, like there is so much like trauma going into this sex scene that it is problematic. And there's so much. And, you know, I just want to say here that like we are going to do our best to explore this dark, sexy situation that is happening in responsible ways and also in ways of like remembering what it was like to watch this for the first time. Reflecting on the fact that, you know, until this viewing of this episode for this podcast, I did not notice the really fucked up things that Spike says to Buffy at all.
Oh, yeah.
And very much experienced this episode as like, oh, fucking yeah, Spike and Buffy fuck the house down. And that is there, right? I think that, like,
hey, we are thinking humans. We can hold two realities,
yes.
Two truths,
yes,
that conflict with one another in our minds simultaneously. Can we not?
We can. And I think that is what is complicated about talking about this and moving through this season in general, is that, like, you know, you can't undo the sexiness of the union of these two characters, but you can explore the fucked up parts of it. And like, and to my point earlier of like, what would have happened if Spike was not saying, I'm the only one that you have? And what would have happened if Spike wasn't sort of like following her in the cemetery? You know, like all these things, because there's a part of me that really believes that these two would have fucked this house down to feel close to each other without it necessarily needing to be this manipulative situation. But you can't make Spike not Spike. And you can't, you know what I mean? Like, he is who he is and he's doing really fucked up shit. Buffy is in a really fucked up place. And they fuck the house down. And you know what? We have a lot of feelings about it.
We do.
We do. So, wow. Wow. As you would say, Jenny, wow, wow, wow.
I'm always saying that.
Luckily, my house is still standing. How's your house doing?
Still standing for now, but you know, the second HGTV calls, shit could get wild.
Open concept 2021.
Hell yeah.
Who are you, Jenny? Should we end the episode? Is it the end of the episode?
I think it is the end of the episode. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs. And when I'm not making this podcast, I am writing and recording all kinds of music. You can learn more about me at JennyOwenYoungs.com. You can give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs. And I'll tell you what, I have two new music things I just want to scream about for 1 second. I have a brand new EP called Echo Mountain that just came out. And my band, my quartet of four queer ladies, queertet, if you will, called LAXs. We just released our first single a couple weeks ago. It's called Temporary Goodbye. You can find it in all the digital streaming places. We are fun. We are a good time. Please join us, follow us, listen to the jam, and there will be more to come in the near future. And some of what's to come will involve a certain dog.
I know about it.
Have expressed allegiance to.
I know about it.
Yeah,
I know the dog.
Get on board with us because there's exciting stuff coming. Okay,
it's cool. Like, bye. LAX is a band that I like, and the song Temporary Goodbye is like, bada bidi bada boopa. Jenny, can we play them a little bit of the song? Was that good?
That was very good.
Okay, can we play them a tiny bit of the song of Temporary Goodbye here in the podcast?
I think so.
Okay, let's just like, just a taste.
Yeah, just a taste. Just the first taste is free, and then the subsequent taste could also be free if you go to Spotify or your streaming platform of choice. It's got a move. I don't wanna die.
Temporary goodbye.
Wow, that's really good, Kristen.
Thank you. I've just been waiting.
To open up a fifth slot.
Thank you. I've just been waiting for my offer letter to come through. My name is Kristen Russo. Always available to be the fifth person in your quartet. You can learn about the work that I do with the LGBTQ community at my website, kristinnoline.com. That's KristinNoeline. I do speaking engagements at workplaces, at schools, you know, wherever. And if you don't want me to speak at your school or your workplace, you can get me to speak on the internet for you anytime on my Twitter or my Instagram, all at KristinNoeline. You can see pictures of my cats. Really, that's what's happening in those spaces. That's what's going on there.
Great pics. Great cats.
Thank you. Thank you. They are. They're wonderful cats. Where can they find us?
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BufferingCast. Or you can drop us an email at BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com.
Yes, and you can support our work on Patreon. We would love it if you did. You can find all of that information at BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Just click on Patreon to join our Patreon family. There's a Facebook group. There's music. Jenny's doing a concert in April. We've got behind the scenes once more with feeling stuff. It's a fun place. Yeah. There's a book club. There's literally something for everyone. You can also go to our store. We have a US store and a UK store. You can find that by clicking shop on the website. We have tons of new stuff. Big fucking nerd merch is abundant and there for you if you are a big fucking nerd. And you know, you could also rate and review us on iTunes if you want. We would love it.
We would. And you know, I guess that's it.
I think that's all.
So it's the time where I say, till next time.
Woo! Walls shaking, walls crumbling.
I've been fighting so hard, I've been running so far, trying to make this hunger go away, Try to kill the feeling. Somehow it just creeps in, deepen into craving. Day by day, can't let the walls come down. Let the walls come down. Can't let the walls come down. Let the walls come down.
You've been going through some changes. Still running through your paces. We don't have to complicate it. A simple plan. We can make a little earthquake. Do it till the floors break. If you wanna make a mistake, I'm your man. Just let the walls come down. Let the walls come down. Let the walls come down. Let the walls come down.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.